Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, July 19th, 2016. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Good, man. How are you?
I am good, and I'm glad you're here. And Dave Hamilton, I hope you're well, too.
I am well, recovering slowly from jet lag, but it's all good.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Well, jet lag is nature's way of reminding you we live on a very big planet.
Yeah, and that also, even as much as we might want to say that time doesn't move linearly, our bodies move through time linearly. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, which is at times very frustrating.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Screen Float from Eternal Storms. That's pretty cool. We'll talk about them in a bit. First, though, I want to talk about the interesting situation that just cropped up for Apple in Iran. So the Iranian government is telling Apple that they have to register in the country to be able to have their cell phone, well, not to be able to, that so that their cell phones, meaning the iPhone, will be included in this big database the country is putting together that will keep track of every cell phone and who it's assigned to. And Apple has not done that yet. Now, if Apple doesn't do that within the next few days, then Iran is threatening to ban all iPhones from the country and go around and find everyone that has an iPhone and confiscate it from them. And they're go ahead.
Without the list.
Without the list. That's right.
Right. So there are logistics issues here. Yes.
There's logic and reality issues here too.
Yeah. Well, that has happened in the past with Iran as well. So Iran says this is part of an anti-smuggling program that they are working on, and they're trying to crack down on cell phones that are being smuggled into the country. And of course, they say this is for the best for the people. Although, when I look at this and I look at the history that Iran has with human rights issues, this sure looks like a database that is prime for abuse in some way.
And I have a question.
Okay.
Jeff. I'll be the good student and put my hand in the air here. They say that they are doing this because they want to crack down on people smuggling iPhones into their country, mm-hmm. right? We don't seem to have a problem here with people wanting to smuggle iPhones into this country, at least not in quantities that I've heard of that bother the government or Apple, for that matter. And of course, every iPhone is made outside of both of the countries we're talking about, mm-hmm. ours being the USA, because that's where the three of us happen to live, and then also Iran. But why are people smuggling iPhones in such quantities into their country? And once we answer that question, maybe addressing that would be a better way to deal with people smuggling iPhones in.
Well, Apple isn't officially selling iPhones in Iran.
Oh, I see. Ah, so Apple is not allowed to sell phones there, and Iran wants them to give them a list of people that happen to be using phones there.
That sounds like a really nice explanation of what's going on now. Yeah. But it's all cell phones, not just iPhones.
To charge tax on the cell phones that are being sold in Iran and allow them to be sold there because the people obviously want them.
There's that. But even if Apple is legitimately selling iPhones in Iran, the country still is building the database. So all of the
that's where my problem comes in, Your Honor, is that clearly the database isn't to stop smuggling.
I agree completely. But that's just the premise they are operating under.
I know. I get that.
Yeah. So we're on the same page here, Dave.
No, I know. I figured I would walk us down that little path to sort of address some of the logical disconnects that might be happening for me and also for anybody listening that wanted to hear them.
And there's also, I mean, there's zero threat to Apple.
If they're not selling phones in Iran, then there's some threat. I mean, clearly, if people are using these phones in Iran, like residents of Iran are using these phones, then Apple is making some money off of those phones that are being sold at some point. So there is some level of threat to Apple, but obviously not a huge one.
Yeah. Not a huge one at all. And the ability of our Iranian authorities being able to follow through with this threat seems to be very limited to me.
Yeah, I'm picturing soldiers walking down the street saying, "Oh, you have an iPhone. Give me that."
Yeah, that could happen, and probably be the police and or there's a branch of the police whose job is to enforce religious compliance. I could see them being used for this too.
Sure. Well, what would be easier for them instead of trying to go to Apple, with whom they don't have at least a huge relationship, if any, that would be easier to go to their local cell carriers and say, I mean, because they know as soon as the phone connects to the network, they know what type of device it is.
Mm-hmm. So, sure.
And not only that, they now have at least triangulated location based on where these devices are. And they have the name of the person who the account is under, maybe. I mean, if it's not a, you know, prepay kind of thing. But it would seem like that's a much simpler path.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff, please.
Okay. So just very quickly. Also, part of this anti-smuggling regulation thing is that if a phone isn't on the state's database or in the state's database, then it can't operate on a cell network. So all the phones that they went to or would potentially confiscate shouldn't be operating on the system anyhow. They'll just turn into bricks, or well, they'll turn into really expensive iPod touches.
I wonder I wonder if this is the thing that could finally bring a revolt against the Ayatollah rule over Iran. It's people having their iPhones taken away or bricked.
On one hand, that's funny, but on the other hand, people really like their iPhones.
People do tend to be pretty fond of their iPhones if they have them.
Yep. Yes, they do. Yeah. So I'm waiting for a response back from Apple on what they plan to do. So once they get back to me, I'll share that with everyone. But I'm curious to see how this plays out, because Apple doesn't have an official presence, so it's not like they're going to have to close any stores or lose any direct sales from this. And do they really want to register with Iran so that the state has a database of everyone using an iPhone? That just doesn't seem to fit with Apple's human rights advocacy.
Yeah, Apple does not want to get into this business of assisting authoritarian regimes in being authoritarian. This is not a business Apple is going to want to be involved in at all.
No, I don't think so. No. So, all right. Well, we'll know in a few days what's going to happen, because that's Iran's time frame. They haven't been any more specific. They just said in a few days. So, I guess we'll see in a few days. And hey, we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is ScreenFloat from Eternal Storms. And if you're not familiar with ScreenFloat, well, you're about to be. It's a slick little app for Mac OS X, and what it does is it lets you take screenshots. But instead of simply taking a screenshot and then it's filed away somewhere and you have to go find it and do with it as you please, it leaves that screenshot floating on your screen, hence screen float. And it's going to float above all the windows you have open, and it makes it very easy to capture a piece of information that you need to have in front of you for a while, and not have to launch extra applications to do that. So, like, let's say you are working on a network and you have some IP addresses or DNS addresses that you need to keep track of, you could take a screenshot of those and just have that floating window there in front of you, so you can just use them whenever you need, or reference them whenever you need, which is kind of cool. It also makes it easy if you are, say, having to capture an image and then email it to someone, you can capture that image and just leave it floating there while you create a new email and then just drag it in, which is pretty nice. I love things that let me cut down on the steps that it takes to do the things that I have to do all the time. And Screen Float does that. So here's what you need to do. You need to go to their website. It's eternalstorms.at/screenfloat. And you can check out the app there. And it costs $8.99, which is not bad at all for something that gives you this kind of functionality. So please go to their website, eternalstorms.at/screenfloat. And thank you, ScreenFloat, for being our sponsor. Okay, the other thing I want to talk about today is a change that's happening with Apple Music and iTunes Match. And so the gist of it is, Apple is changing the way it looks at the music in our libraries through Apple Music so that it matches the way it's been working in iTunes Match. And the end result is that we will have more accurate song matching in Apple Music than we have previously had. And the added bonus of that is that if you are an Apple Music subscriber and an iTunes Match subscriber, you won't need to have an iTunes Match subscription anymore. You'll need just the one, and you're good all the way around. Does that sound about right?
Well, yeah, and I think the piece that was missing from your explanation is that the resulting files that you can pull down that are matched by Apple Music now are DRM free,
right?
Like the iTunes Match files were previously, because up until now, any file you would pull down that was matched by Apple Music, whether it got it right or wrong, was pulled down as the type of the file was an Apple Music file, and that has all sorts of DRM around it, as you would expect, because if you're going to pull something down from Apple Music, it should only last as long as your subscription lasts. However, sure. The Match stuff now going forward will not have that DRM, according to everything that I've seen. It's really impossible for me to test it because I'm an iTunes Match subscriber. So I've turned off the auto renew of iTunes Match, but it won't disable for me until actually December of this year. So
you still have a few more months, which means that you have a few more months for this to kick in for you.
What, right.
The other thing I heard is that Apple is rolling this out slowly. So it could be today when it kicks in for you. It could have already kicked in, or it might be several weeks from now.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that your iTunes Match doesn't expire till December is probably a good thing. That gives you a nice buffer zone for Apple to get you up to date on the new system.
But for folks that don't have iTunes Match, it's worth, gosh, I wonder how that's going to work, right? Because up until now, anything you pulled down would have been the type of Apple Music file. What happens? Like, I guess you would have to remove those, not from your library, but from your computer. And so mm-hmm. you have to delete very carefully and be aware of the question it's asking you. Do you want to remove it from the cloud or just from the computer? And you say remove from the computer and then tell it to download it again. And in theory, it should pull down the DRM-free version of that file, a 256 kbps. AAC file is what it should be.
Right. And that sounds right. What I have been hearing is that Apple is not going to actively delete and replace music.
good. I mean, some people would want that, and I understand why. I would too, but no.
No, I would not want that either. And just the idea that I have a very specific version of a song that could get deleted and overwritten is not something I want to deal with. And this is something Apple has been getting flack for, because people have had music overwritten with versions they didn't want.
So, yeah, most of that was user error. And a better way of saying it, because the blame still falls on Apple, in my opinion, for all that stuff that kind of previously happened. It was user error as a result of interface confusion. People didn't quite understand what they were agreeing to, what they were telling it to do, and therefore it did these things that people didn't expect. But it was, if you looked carefully, it was doing exactly what you told it to do, but not
what you meant to do.
You got it. Yeah. Yeah. As computers, you know, we're all geeks here and have done, you know, at various levels, different amounts of programming. And so we've all learned the hard way that computers do what you tell them to do, not what you want them to do. but that's one thing to laugh about it when you're talking about it from a programming standpoint. Like, you know, you're doing things right. Whereas when it's a piece of software, especially one that came from the manufacturer of your computer, it should be especially when that manufacturer is Apple, it should be intuitive. And there were parts of it that weren't. But I think that's straightened itself out now, which is a good thing. So,
yep, I agree. That's a good thing. All right. So then the one question that comes up for me now is, since this is how it should have worked from the beginning, why in the world didn't Apple just set up Apple Music like this when it launched?
Well, I mean, I think so. iTunes Match existed previously, mm-hmm. right, to Apple Music. Apple Music, they bought Beats. They took some things from Beats, but really couldn't use Beats as infrastructure because Beats had, you know, 10% of the users that Apple expected to have and then did have. So they, as I understand it, from the folks I've talked to, it was rebuilt entirely from the ground up and sort of kept some user interface elements from Beats. But they had to do that very, very quickly to be able to launch Apple Music on the schedule that they wanted to launch it. So I think this was just one of those things where it was like, yeah, these two things should link together, but really we got to get that up and running. This other thing already works. The people that are using it are happy. Yeah, there's going to be some folks that complain about the fact that it's ridiculous that we have these two different matching systems running in parallel, and we'll fix that down the road. And here we are down the road and they fixed that. I you know, again, being a programmer, I know that you have to ship, and that means, you know, freezing the features.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that noise is.
I think Brian just hopped on the train.
I think he did.
That's kind of what it sounds like.
Hang up on Brian.
Yep, I think so.
What?
Brian, your audio just took a dirt nap on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, you know, it's unfortunate that happened, but at least it happened right at the end of the show when we're out of time.
You got it.
So with that, Dave, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm really glad I could be here.
His pleasure.
Yes, his pleasure. And Eternal Storms, thank you for making Screen Float our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, eternalstorms.at/screenfloat. It's only $8.99 and totally worth getting. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.